is inner meditation, is outer meditation, I mean. He spends extensive time in meditation and reflection while also creating and holding space for many pilgrims. He created the Urban Ashram on May 13, 5 years ago. Entering the Urban Ashram is similar to entering the rooms of your inner self. The noise and the bustle of the busy streets in Pune just outside its premises, they die down as you gradually enter the yard, filled with trees and plants, and then you open the doors to a serene, beautiful space that has hosted several tired souls on many Wednesday evenings. Sheetal has been instrumental in rippling many beautiful acts of generosity and kindness, just like what Prakash mentioned, and being an embodiment of service and love. And personally for me, when he was, I met Sheetal for the first time when he was here last year, and I had the wonderful opportunity of attending a meditation retreat with him and his wife, Kushmita. And just his never-ending generosity. He had just come from this ladership retreat, and everyone had this service phase water bottle, which was, you know, I'm sure it was a very special souvenir from that very special event. And he just gave it to me. He said, Vinaya, this is for you. And just, you know, and he was, I think I got my first tag from Sheetal. He gave me the book, Sheetal, what's the name of the book by Hermann Hesse that you gave me? Siddhartha. Yes. And the funny thing was, you know, he tagged me with the book and a smile card, and he had a little note in the book, and I had no idea who had given it to me. And then I happened to visit the Urban Ashram when I was in India last summer, and he was tagging somebody else, and I recognized his handwriting, and I said, oh my God, you're the first person who gave me who tagged me with a smile card and a gift. So that was beautiful. And when I was in the Urban Ashram, I got to be there for a Wednesday, and just to experience the different flavor of Wednesday at Pune. And what happened was there was a lot of food that was left after the dinner offering and after the after Wednesday was over. And there was this volunteer, Suvit, who comes to Urban Ashram regularly, and he put everything into boxes and he said, do you want to come with me to a place? And then Sheetal and Suvit and I, we went to this open shelter, kind of not even a shelter, it was just a space near the Pune Central bus stop. It was a rainy and cold night, and we went there, and there was this bunch of homeless men and women sitting there, really cold and trying to sleep through the night, sitting down in the space, and they put out some newspapers and they started serving them food. It was one of the most amazing things in my life to see them just serve that food with so much love. And then it's only later that I knew that every Wednesday now they intentionally make extra food, so they will have leftovers and they will be able to go and share that food with people there. So that's just one of the many, many examples of how Sheetal embodies generosity and love in his life. Sheetal, it's such an honor to be on this call with you today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I feel like I'm talking to distributed family all over the world.
Mm-hmm. We wanted to start with asking you if there were particular events in your life that propelled your journey on inner transformation, and how did those experiences shape you to what you are today?
As I mentioned, when I was 9, my father passed away due to a cardiac arrest, and he was one of the most nicest people I knew, super fit, teetotaler. He had none of the symptoms. He had none of the habits any person that could lead to something like a cardiac arrest. And when he was taken away at my age of 9, there was this huge vacuum. And I think Amit, at the beginning of this call, said very beautifully that when you're faced with loss, you actually have, it's like a vortex of pain of sorts. And I had two options, either to go deep into that vortex and figure out the questions, the deeper questions like, what is life all about? Who am I? Or I could just go on the defensive you know, just try and blank out the pain. But I think destiny had other plans for me, and it chose that I go deeper into this question of who am I, what is life, what is death. I think in many ways, I attribute the start of my journey to that phase. That I feel was the most important event that put me on this path. Other than that, I grew up to be fairly introverted, yet I could manage socially, academically very well. In time, when I went, when I finished my engineering studies in India, I had the opportunity to go to Chicago for a management degree. And it was my time in the U.S., far away from my home, my family, where I had even more time as I used to walk up and down the shores of the Lakeshore Drive every day. Somehow that phase of when I was nine again came back, and it gripped me, and I started asking these questions again as to what is the purpose of life, and am I cut out for the corporate world? Am I cut out for the business world? And in many ways, the answers just kept coming. It's time to go back home. And yeah, these two periods were very, very, very intensely transforming for me.
I can imagine, you know, losing your dad at such a tender age must have been really difficult. And like you said, you chose the path of going deeper into your own self, which we are all so thankful for. I'm also kind of in a similar phase where you said, you know, kept getting the question of, kept feeling that you wanted to go back home and it was time for you to head back. So I'm able to relate with that. How do you tune yourself to your inner being? What are some of your daily practices?
In my everyday life, what my sincere effort is to be present, to give my 100%, to be aware and mindful at all times. So more than any external practice, it's more like a constant 24-hour space that I hold for myself to be a witness, to be aware, to be mindful. That said, something that really, really grounds me, centers me, connects me with life all around me is taking, you know, long walks. I try and go for a walk every day between half an hour, 1 hour, sometimes two, depending on the space I am in. I genuinely love journaling. And since my time last year when I did a 30-day gratitude journey, writing down at least three things that I'm grateful for every day is a practice I try and do every night before I sleep. I try and seek out the company of elders, of people who've seen life. In India, we call such meetings satsang. Keeping the company of the true, the virtuous. And it is said that just by being in the presence of someone like that, transformation starts happening inside you. I think, yeah, these are some of the practices.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned being in company of elders and holding satsangs. Can you tell us about maybe, you know, one such experience of actually holding space with an elder or someone who really inspired you and you learned from? I'm sure there are many, but can you share one story with us?
There are so many. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, I was at Udaipur, and we were visiting this community called Shikshantar. And as part of that space, a friend of ours, Vipul, he happened to take us to this 92-year-old saint. And his name was Sant Amitabh. Here was a man as he spoke to us, he said 14 years of his life he had been in complete silence, of which 6 years was in a deep forest, of which 3 years at a stretch he had not seen a single human being. And wow. Just the way he spoke, the presence he had, it was a very transformative experience. And when I'm in the presence of such people, I always try and ask a question that comes straight up from the heart in that moment. And to him that day, I had asked, what is the meaning of life? And just the way he spoke about Vairagya and Vivek, which translated means work to free yourself of cravings and aversions. And Vivek, he said, is develop your intellect, your capacity to discriminate between what's appropriate for you, what's healthy for you, and what is not. Just that half an hour of satsang with him, for the next 10 days, almost every day, that feeling was on my mind and heart 24 hours. And these are just one of the many instances that, a wise person would leave a word as a seed inside me. And in time, with my own mindfulness and awareness, it gets nourished into a rich, vibrant, lush tree. And the fruits are amazing.
Thank you. In urban ashram and in other spaces, in many spaces, you don't just hold space for yourself. You're holding space for so many people. How do you do that while also holding space for yourself, and yet being so mindful of the fact that you're also holding space for others? How do you do that?
A running joke in the ashram community is, there's this thing about this rich person we read about who had 6 luxury cars. And another friend just commented, why the hell would someone need 6 cars when he just needs one to get from A to B? So even from my yoga practices, the practice of aparigraha, which means the law of least possession, minimizing your impact on earth, having a Zen-like simplicity, it really, for me, allows me to keep more space for myself than others. And in that, the analogy I would like to offer is, when we go on a pilgrimage or on a journey or travel, we do need our stuff like clothes, toiletries, whatever we need. But the more we pack in, the slower our journeys are. And personally for me, I have this kind of rule going on that if I have not touched anything in my space, in my home for 6 months, and if I have no use for it over the next 6 months, I would rather donate it away, gift it away, so that someone somewhere could make better use of it. How that helps me is it just keeps a space clutter-free, empty for me. And I equate my external space and clutter with my inner space. And I've noticed that in clean spaces, like when I've traveled and visited monasteries or ashrams, the cleaner, the emptier the spaces, somehow there's a deeper peace and serenity that envelops me. So that practice is something I'm very passionate about. And also going forward, it starts with the tangible of, giving away external, giving away physical, tangible things. But over a period of time, I've also started developing this habit of dropping conditionings or belief systems or habits which no longer serve me well. And sometimes I try and equate it like a computer, We have so many files on a computer from some maybe from many years ago which were useful at some point, but they no longer are needed now. And they just create a clutter. They slow down our systems. So I try and delete unneeded things or, as I said, give them away or donate them away. That's one practice I feel genuinely helps me keep space inner space for myself and allows me to offer space for more and more people who come to visit the ashram.
Beautiful, Sheetal. I love what you said about equating your external space and clutter with your, with your inner space. That was such a beautiful analogy. Thank you.
If I could add?
Sure, please.
Yeah, the word that comes very strongly to me is landscape. We have an inner landscape of our thoughts, our emotions, our beliefs, our conditionings, our habits. And this inner landscape is what somehow finds ways to project itself out on a daily basis. Like the beautiful story that always it always amuses me that if you want orange juice, don't go around squeezing lemons. And what it means is what is inside you is what's going to come out. So if we just stop and say, what is it that we want in our external landscapes? What is it that we want in our lives around us? Shouldn't we be planting the seeds of that inside us, which in turn, what I'm trying to say is the inner mirrors the outer. We have little control over the outer. We definitely have more say over what we want to plant in the inner landscape.
And
Vinya, can I jump in here for a second?
Please,
if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Sheetal, this summit, I really love this analogy, as Vinya said, of creating that landscape on the outside, and I'm almost mirroring it in the internal. I've been looking for months for real motivation to actually even get my own place together, and so I appreciate
wow.
that. You, I guess, you know, one thing that kind of comes to mind is, I guess, how do you, you know, you just talked about the importance of having that so you can plant the appropriate seeds, plant the appropriate intentions, and, you know, many times, you know, I feel we go through life, you know, oh, we hope for something, or we deeply hope that something like that, we plant that intention, but, and I'm sure you have along the way, but how have you watered those plants? How have you watered those seeds so that they have sprouted to where you've come today with the Urban Ashram?
What I try and always remind myself that is that it's very important to weed and feed. In our life, we have so many habits or belief systems. And knowing you, Amit, and your love for Kabir, it's what Kabir used to say, beech boye babool ke aam kahan se khaye, which translated means if you plant the seeds for a thorny tree, why do you wish to eat mangoes of that tree? So for me, it was very important, as I said, in my introspective times, I would really sit down with myself and study my inner landscape. And almost like if this scenario works, if my mind was a computer, I try and look at what files are there, what programs are running, and which are the programs and files that I wish to keep and nourish, and which are the ones that I need to delete at the earliest. And then what are the processes I need to do the weeding, and what are the processes I need to do the seeding? What I'm trying to say is it takes a certain amount of inner reflection, inner work, and a lot of patience, because these answers aren't easy. Sometimes planting the question and waiting for the answer can have a timeline of years. But I think asking the right questions is very important.
But I mean, you know, that's a great point. And it can take years, and it can take a lot of work. So then where do you find the energy, the drive, the enthusiasm to kind of keep going? You know, and this kind of comes back to the earlier theme of, you know, when you're facing adversity, what is it that you do that keeps you moving forward?
One thing I forgot to add earlier was the importance of deeply held mantras. And by mantras, I mean affirmative statements to myself. When in time of great adversity, what I always remind myself is, this too shall pass. And in the journey of life, we are just pilgrims. We are not residents. So why are we so concerned about these houses we built? And we build them on the bridges, and the bridges are the ones that we are here to cross. So in many ways, I try and humor myself by stepping back and seeing the impermanence of it, the futility of it, yet at the same time acknowledging that there is pain and there is adversity.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sheetal.
Thank you.
So, Sheetal, it's one thing to be able to be tuned into our inner self and have these beautiful practices and emulate them. And it's a totally different thing when when you're in a partnership, when you're married, and then you're trying to live these values and principles. And I know that Kushmita and you share so many of these principles and values, and she does her own amazing acts of generosity and kindness and seeking inner truths. How do both of you support each other in this journey together? Well, how do you support each other, and how do you both keep your alignments towards that, the value system that both of you might have created together?
I think one of the most important things we do is we try and create spaces between each other. I would love to quote Gibran here when he used to say that, be like the pillars of a temple that hold the space up, not too near and not too far. Or he even mentioned it in the team, like, be like two trees growing together, yet not eating into each other's space and nourishment. So I think creating space between us mindfully is one of the most important practices we have. Towards that end, we will be, we try and sit in silence every day. We go for retreats. She could be gone for a week for a yoga camp. I could be gone for 10 days for a vipassana. I think just creating those spaces is very important. And second, we actively dialogue and engage about a shared value system, what is our vision, and where are we headed, and how do we kind of... this is a beautiful teaching that I received once way before my marriage, and it created a deep impact on me. This teacher in New York shared with me that if there are two people, a man and a woman, and they get attracted to each other and they start coming towards each other, a point will come when they will meet. But how long will they be in that one static state? Because their movement towards each other was linear. So after they've met and after a certain point, their journeys will continue, but their backs will be to each other. And that's what happens with most relations, which come running towards each other but end up running away from each other over a period of time. What that teacher told me is, if you ever find the ideal partner, make sure that you both find a point to walk towards. And that point could be a shared spiritual path, a shared practice. And what that encourages is that you both start walking towards a third point, and at some point you will merge into each other and into that you're seeking. So that's some of the things that we try and actively engage in.
Thank you. So just thinking about Urban Ashram and the many beautiful things that happen there, can you tell us about some, acts of generosity that, can you share some stories from your experiments in generosity, or even just stories from some things that you've done at the ashram with the many volunteers who've come there?
Sure. What is coming very strongly as you're asking this question is, I'm just feeling that the whole of life is nothing but a giant paid-forward carnival. Anything that I'm inspired to do, or in our community that anyone is inspired to do, is usually the result of them having been touched by this act in their life at some point. The very birthing of the ashram itself is the result of a paid forward. In that way, when I was in Chicago, I was going through a rough patch, and there was this beautiful Indian couple whom I had only met two or three times at a spiritual satsang. And in conversation, when they came to know of my difficulty, what they ended up doing is taking me inside into their homes, into their hearts. And they hosted me for almost a year and with no strings attached. And it was beautiful because till a month ago, we did not even know each other. And here I was living with them. The seeds of that generosity really went deep into me. And I committed that if ever I have a home of my own, I would love to keep it open for traveling pilgrims, for people who need that support. So the ashram itself, as I was sharing, feels like this giant. It's something that I've received that I am paying forward. I also remember my first Wednesday at Santa Clara. I received something there in that gathering, a food, a nourishment, that I was not even aware that I was hungry for. But once I received it, it nourished me so beautifully and deeply that very day I felt again that if ever I have a space of my own, I would love to host similar gatherings. And that in time did happen, and I'm deeply grateful for the Wednesdays and the service space community that planted these seeds. Another couple of things, another couple of stories that come to mind, as Vinaya, you shared in the beginning, was how every Wednesday a group of volunteers between 3 and 4 would just take the leftover food and go walk the streets and not just feed the homeless, but actually sit down and have a minute or two conversations with them, a deep connection at not only, you know, just giving a food kind of level, but also asking them their name and just connecting with them at a, you know, human to human level. Another thing that in terms of generosity, what we have at the ashram is, as I mentioned earlier, we have this policy of not keeping anything that is not needed. And that again reminds me of this beautiful Gibran quote where he says that you give little when you give up your possession. It is when you give up yourself that you truly give. And it's beautiful now that people who've been coming to the ashram for a few years actively see the value of doing this. And we've started having food collection drives. We have toy collection drives, book collections. We just all pool in everything that is sitting unused, underutilized in our homes. We bring them together, and then we would go to spaces like an orphanage or, you know, a space for the elderly and just distribute it in those spaces.
Thank you, Sheetal. One thing that comes to mind is, you know, 5 years of having created and held the space, and I was just curious to know when can you tell us something about your perspective when you started this journey of just kind of sculpting this dream and, you know, venturing into creating the space? And then now, 5 years later, how can you tell us something about how that journey has been, what your vision was, and how the vision has maybe changed or shaped in its own course, or maybe the vision was the same and it's still the same now? Can you tell us some perspectives on that?
Sure. When we opened in 2008, I had inherited my family house, and the home we live in is like 45 years old. And with any space that has been around for that long, it tends to accumulate a lot of stuff. So for the first 2 or 3 years of the ashram's existence, we kind of gave away 5 truckloads of stuff, because we just wanted to empty the space. And the urban ashram, when I sat 5 years ago, the message that came to me was, create a space to be. Create a space of goodness, create a space where magic can happen. I'm reminded of what Madhu always says, just create a beautiful space and watch the magic happen, or, you know, just open up a space and see what happens. So the driving energy in the first, as we speak, 5 years, or as I like to say, Ashram 1.0, was just creating space, and creating space of beauty, of serenity, creating a space where people can breathe, creating a space where people can be. And in that process, my personal experience is when someone has a deep experience of their inner self, a lot of articulation of their inner voice, a lot of clarity about their journey starts emerging. And then it's just, the only thing we have to do is honor the inner voice. So for many, the first 5 years, that was the focus of creating the space and allowing people to get in touch with their deeper selves. Of late, over the last, I think, 9 months, ever since I returned from the service space retreat, the vision of an Ashram 2.0 is emerging. And that is now totally, has, I can truly say, is inspired by many of the activities we do in our service space community. So what's coming very strongly now going forward is that we want to engage more and more inner work through the power of circles, like how we have the awakened circles, or, you know, inviting guest speakers, then through the power of sharing stories, sharing stories of positivity, because we never know the ripple of where the story could reach. And definitely creating more and more spaces both inside ourselves and outside ourselves. So the going forward vision is spaces, stories, and circles. Mm.
Spaces, stories, and circles. Can you tell us about you know, some transformations you've seen in the volunteers who come to the Urban Ashram regularly, and just many people you've met? Any stories at all that come to your mind of, you know, someone's trajectory from getting into the journey on self and then where they are right now?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. There are many stories. I'm just trying to think which would be the most appropriate. There's a beautiful story of someone who had been coming for, you know, the Awaken or the earlier Wednesday circles at the ashram for the last 5 years. And one day last year, she just got up and said, I love Wednesdays, and it would be so wonderful if every day I woke up and it would be a Wednesday. And I asked her, what is it that you love? And she said, you know, the fact that we come together, sit in silence, then we have space to share stories and share our, you know, a thought that we would not have otherwise spoken in front of strangers, is something that deeply inspires me. And over this last 1 year, this lady has actually gone out and created two more awakens in Pune itself. And it's very interesting because in very diverse settings. One, every Thursday she conducts this awaken gathering at a space for senior citizens who are between the age 60 and 90. And on every Monday evening, she goes to this nunnery where there are around 12 nuns who've been living there, some of whom have been in service for 50 years, and they hold an awaken gathering every Monday. And it amuses me that, you know, if someone is deeply touched, like I was many, many years ago, how they take it forward. So that's one story that comes to mind. Another is we try and encourage people to hold a practice of yoga. And I can genuinely see so many transformations in that. Two that come to mind are a friend, Bina, who's been in the banking. She's a banker for the last 7 years. And she's been coming for the classes, and one day she just, you know, decides that she's had enough of her career and she wants to actually go deep inside, study yoga, become a teacher and come back into community and go and share her love for yoga as her seva. And as we speak right now, she's in Kerala, having quit her job 3 months ago for a 1 month intensive. And stories like this always bring a smile to my face, because there's so many of us who are complaining about our life, our careers, our jobs, our dissatisfaction. But when someone steps up and says, "I'm going to do something about it," that really brings a smile to my face. Another story is, again, this is a ripple forward from Santa Clara, because when I used to go for the Wednesdays there, there's this beautiful library of books, which I think it was called Open Source. And as we came back at the ashram, that was one feature we genuinely wanted. So we just invited our entire community to pool in all their books, and we kept them on the Wednesday table. And every week, people are invited to take any book and leave any book. Inspired by this this experiment, one of our friends, Harsh, what he ended up doing is he had received a gift of around 6,000 rupees to do an act of kindness. So he went and bought many inspirational books like Siddhartha, Prophet. He made around 10 boxes of books and sent them to different awakened gatherings across India with the note that, "I was inspired to start a little experiment, a paid forward library. Can you do the same in your own community?" Which genuinely touched me.
Shito, I wanted to come back to, you know, what you were saying about yoga, because I know it was very important in your own journey and continues to be. It's something that you guys offer as a regular part of the community space at the ashram. You know, and yoga, it's interesting, you know, it's become such a, I want to say, phenomena here in the United States, or I should say Western culture. I mean, it's been a part of, you know, India's tradition for many, many years, but it seems to have really taken on a life of its own here. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, out here oftentimes yoga is seen as, you know, oh, yeah, this is something that you do to lose weight, or it's something that is used just for health, or, you know, there's some new things that are popping up that are even more, that are somewhat even outrageous. But, you know, it's interesting just considering that, you know, often, you know, for some, you know, the yoga refers to more of a spiritual discipline, you know, whether it's the asanas, the postures, or the pranayama, the breathing exercises, were more of a method to clean and transform the body, and, you know, and for spiritual realization. And so I'm curious, kind of, what is yoga meant to you, and what is it, what kind of a space does it hold there in the ashram?
Beautiful question. Yoga for me has been, if I really understand it correctly, it comes from the Sanskrit root word called yuj, and that means to yoke. So the whole philosophy of yoga is any process that you do that connects your individual self with the higher self or the divine, whatever you would like to call it. It's a process of you dissolving into the higher self. With that end, you could be doing asanas, you could be doing breathing practices, you could be, as I said, in satsang. In India, the way we say is there are four main branches of yoga. One is karma yoga, one is bhakti yoga, one is jnana yoga, and one is raj yoga. They each have a world of their own, but at the end of it, the whole practice is of trying to find a way to unite yourself with the divine. And you asked about its place in the ashram. So we actively bring in teachers from different parts of yoga. But we stress that the goal is the same. And we try and cater to different kinds of groups like students, senior citizens. We sometimes even go into an orphanage or an old age home just with the pure intention to serve through yoga.
Oh, that's beautiful. You know, one question I did have in addition to that is, you know, and this comes back to a conversation we were having with Vinya earlier about, you know, your life partner and you know, the importance of walking toward a sort of the same path goal, I guess. How have the two of you grown together as you guys have been going through this? And, you know, I'm sure each person faces their own individual challenges. And maybe even, you know, that sometimes that end journey or that end goal may look a little bit different. And so how have you two supported one another? And again, coming back to that, to, you know, this sort of larger space that you guys are supporting.
Again, genuinely just active dialogue, I feel, is one of the most important things in any relation. To keep sharing authentically, to be honest, to again give space to each other, to be able to hold each other, to again coming back to the understanding that love is not like this constant flow, but there are micro moments, and how do you create more and more of those micro moments in your daily life? And I think just holding each other in a sense of wonder and mystery and allowing each other to be, I think, has been a very important process for both of us.
Thank you. You know, we have a caller, a question in the queue.
Hi, Sheetal. This is Prahlad and Nandini. It is so good to hear your voice. One question I had for you was there, I'm sure through the journey of bringing up the urban ashram and then through your life journey as you've gone through, you know, the soul-searching path, there must have been challenges or events that really pushed you or really challenged you or, you know, brought you to the edge of questioning, you know, wait, is this really what I want to be doing? Could you share some stories of that and how you overcame them?
Yes. Thank you, Prahlad. That's beautiful. I remember this one very clear instance in my time when I was at business school. I'd reached a point when I just did not want to continue. I had around three months left to finish my degree. And I was just very clear that I did not want to do this anymore. And I just took, at that point, I took off on a nine-month journey, just wanting to figure out what is it that I really wanted in my life. And I remember at that point, for the first 3 months, if someone asked me, what do you want to do? I would only talk about what I did not want to do. And somehow, someday it just struck me that what am I doing? Shouldn't I be focusing on where I want to head, what I want in my life, rather than what I don't want? And at that point, I sat down and I started journaling. So I would write down this question, what makes me come alive? And every morning, the first thing in the day, I would ask myself, what makes me come alive? And I would take like maybe 20 minutes to half an hour to just list down catchwords, whatever came to mind. So words like yoga or meditation or nature or conversations or service. And for 3 months, I would do this practice. And at the end of 3 months, I just saw my diary. And I said, wow, there's like 20 or 30% of things that I've written almost every day. And I want to build my life around that. So that's how kind of I started getting clarity on what I wanted and what I didn't want. Regarding how I deal with my adversities is, as I mentioned a little while earlier, is just this constant remembrance that am I the sky or am I the clouds? And another beautiful analogy is, am I the ocean or am I the waves? So just constantly remembering the theory or the fact of impermanence, that this too shall pass, has held me in good stead. I hope that answers you.
Oh yeah, that did. Thank you so much. And I think one tool that I think has helped you bring clarity to yourself. And I think I'm going to start trying to do as well is to keep an active journal and to ask those questions, because it's very easy to ask those questions in a fleeting moment and say, oh, you know, this is something I do want and this is something I don't want in my life in order for it to be wholesome. But when you have it written down, you're actually able to go back and see if it agrees with you and how much it changes from day to day, moment to moment. So I think that's a beautiful suggestion.
Thank you.
I agree. Thank you very much. That's a great question.
Hi, this is Michelle from Santa Fe. Thank you so much for what you're doing and for being here also. The question and comment, earlier when I spoke at the beginning circle, I forgot to say what my, you know, what I see my purpose in my life is, and that's actually for weaving the oneness of humanity. And I've been aware of that for much of my life, although it has grown and expanded, and how it has been expressed has shifted over time. But I have lived in Africa, and I've lived in China, and I've lived in Europe, and I speak many languages, and I'm aware of the oneness of humanity, and both living that and expressing that and sharing that and inviting other people to share that awareness has been what I've given my life to. Right now, I'm feeling somewhat frustrated in that, because I'm physically limited and not able to travel and do the things I've done in the past. And I'm wondering two things. One is how do you see the relationship between what can be done in a place like Silicon Valley and a place that can be done where you're currently in India, and how can we bring those different awarenesses together? That's what drives me. And in particular, in living a lifestyle that is sustainable for every human being, which I heard you speaking to, how can we bring a greater awareness to what that actually means and how that would look? And then second, do you have any suggestions for my personal frustration in shifting from a physically active doing mode to something a little less doing-oriented, but still staying aligned with what I'm here for?
Thank you, Michelle. I loved what you spoke about, having a vision of weaving a oneness of all humanity. It reminds me of this beautiful Sanskrit mantra which says, Loka Samastha Sukhino Bhavantu, which translated says, may all beings everywhere be happy. And in response to your earlier question, I feel Jayeshbhai's father was a very important mentor in my life, where he used to say, bloom where you're planted. You can serve where you are. You don't need to go somewhere else. And you can be of service in so many ways. And another beautiful story from Mother Teresa's time is when she said, you can do no great things. You can only do small things with great love. I think just planting seeds of the desire to be of service, the desire to do it with great love, if we can hold just the awareness and mindfulness for these intentions, I think life has a way of showing a path, if that helps.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Maria, and I wanted to thank you, Shita, for being available for this call and for the inspiration. It's really great to hear all your ideas and that you're sharing. Thank you so much. And my question is that when you talked about the mirror, the inner mirrors the outer, and how is my inner landscape, I've noticed sometimes that we tend to not see the whole inner landscape. We see some parts of it, and the parts of our heart sometimes we're not so aware of. It's like a blind spot. So how do we know that what we're putting out is really what we're thinking we're putting out? Because we may not be seeing ourselves truly or honestly. So that's my question. basically it's like a matter of if it's, you know, if it correlates, reality correlates to what we think of ourselves.
Maria, what I was thinking as you were speaking, a very powerful analogy came to my mind when, you know, when we drive a car, the faster we go, the lesser our visibility.
Yes.
Something like, you know, if you're driving at 60 miles per hour, you have maybe a 60-degree vision, whereas if you were driving at 20, you might have 120-degree vision. So the number of blind spots, I feel, in my inner landscape is correlated with how fast I'm running or how restless I am. And that's why the slower I become, the more still, the more clearly I can see what lies at the bottom of the lake of my mind, if that helps. But for me, a key has been to slow down and really look deeply.
You know, Sheetal, these are just some incredible insights that you're providing. You know, one thing that I was interested in hearing about were, you know, you talked about the evolution of the ashram. You know, you talked about the 1.0 version, the 2.0 version, and I'm curious what 3.0 is going to look like.
that's another 2 years from now. we'll see when we get there.
Amit, can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Hi, Sheetal. So nice to hear you, and I'm really looking forward to coming to the Urban Ashram soon again.
Thank you.
One thing I'm not saying this could be an excuse, you know, because I know, and I'm around several people who, once they decide that this is the path they want to take, things just align for them. I know that. But one thing that I struggle with is balancing doing some volunteer work or service work and also trying to balance the needs of having to have a house and paying my bills. And I always struggle with that because I guess it's not aligned for me right now. It's two different worlds, you know. I go and work at a certain place because that helps me pay my bills, and then my service work is like a separate part of. So I'm just curious to know, how do you manage to balance both of those aspects and stay aligned, you know? Like, do you practice gift economy when, like, all the activities are at Urban Ashram, and how does all this come together?
In direct response, what's coming very strongly is many times even I find myself in the state of duality I love to do this and I want to do this, yet I have to be somewhere else doing something else. And what I try and remind myself is, it's first very important for me to simplify my life, and then my most basic needs, I will have to, if I have to work for them or provide for them, let me do it joyfully, in a manner that best suits my temperament, makes me happy, or keeps me happy. Of course, again, this process of figuring that out can take a little time, as it did for me too. And even what's coming up very strongly for you concerned right now is, there's some things we, no matter how much we don't want to do them, we still end up waking up every day faced with it. And I remember once what Nipun Bhai said. He said, it will not end until it ends in love. So until we really don't own our lives, take ownership, take charge, even start loving the things that we don't like, I think for me the shift has been to start actively loving. And I love what Osho used to say. He used to say, it's okay to like and dislike something. That's the play of the mind. Try and love everything. Try and accept everything. Try and embrace everything. For me, that is more of a practice that I try and do.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You know, Shita, when you were out in Chicago and you were, you doing management studies and whatnot, and then you decided to sort of take, a very sort of different path. And I'm sure that you were in touch with, you may or may not be in touch with some of those people, but you've surely come across folks within the business world or even folks that might even drop by the ashram. And I'm curious, what sort of, interactions you have with those individuals, specifically because, in my personal experience, sometimes, when confronted with someone maybe prescribed to a certain path and then gone completely opposite of it, there is sometimes people take, I don't want to say offense to it, but they get jarred by it because, are they begin to feel insecure? Well, wait, are they, what they're doing, is that not right? Should they be going down a different path? Or they might feel offended or whatnot. So I guess my question is, how do you, I don't want to say reconcile, but, when confronted with that type of situation or when you're having a conversation with such person, how do you explain that shift in you and, what it might mean for that other individual who may not be on that same path?
Brilliant question, Amit. What comes from, it's coming very, like this cartoon in my head right now is this whole Occupy movement of the 99 versus the one. So earlier when I considered myself, alternative or doing something radically different, I always considered myself the 1%. And any of the 99% type people I met, I would be like, come over to this side, it's better, it's more peaceful, it's nicer. So even though I was proposing that, yet there was a sense of pulling and struggling inside me. And one day I just sat down with myself and said, what am I doing? Isn't it about the Occupy 100%? Isn't it about all of us? And is it not possible to love and serve where you are? Why should someone change their entire lifestyle or the entire way of living or being to be able to love and serve? So what I've started doing consciously in all my interactions is just planting seeds of kindness, generosity, love, service, and just sharing stories that you can be of service, you can love, you can have inner transformation right where you are. You don't need to go far away.
Speaking to someone that, that you journal as frequently as you do, and that allows you an opportunity to truly deeper reflect and being as focused as you are on inner transformation, I'm curious to hear, what are some of the current challenges you are personally facing with your own, journey and how any of us might be able to be of support to you as well in that instance?
The struggles more and more, I get to spend a lot of time with myself and I'm realizing that the real challenges, the real obstacles in life are not out there. It's really inside me. And this is like, I was born into this faith that worshipped this prophet called Mahavir. And he would say that the only battle worth fighting is the one where your inner enemies. And it's trying to gain victory over that. So more and more with every passing day, I'm realizing the challenges of the subtle traces of ego or greed or lust as they come up on a daily basis, sometimes in small doses, sometimes in big. How do I mindfully be aware of them, not act on them, yet not repress them? And I think service-based community is doing enough already. it's done more than its fair share. From this point, it's only, the cup can only overflow. I don't think there's anything else that I could possibly ask for. Thank you so much for even offering, but really my cup is full and I can only offer my deepest love and gratitude for that.
Namaste Shital, this is Ram from San Jose. How are you?
Hello, how are you?
Good. I had one more question and that is kind of a follow-up to what Kanchan was asking. I can totally see, like, you are living such a simple life. and very limited, you know, need for stuff or things, you know. So I understand that part, but what I was curious about and wanted to learn more about from you was what is the importance of money for you? Meaning, like, when you started out, you know, I guess 5 years ago, did you think about, like, having some, you know, financial cushion, or do you worry about, or do you get anything, you know, concerned about, like, okay, I want to do certain activity, or I want to travel, or I want to do this or that, or even run the urban ashram for any of your operations or activities? You know, how do you fulfill the need, you know, for money? Because money is still important for anyone, right? So I just wanted to understand how you live your life and how you manage that part.
Thank you, Ram. I would be lying if I said I did not have these concerns earlier. But of late, what started happening is this beautiful phenomenon of things appearing just in time. Whatever resources that I do need nowadays somehow just magically seem to appear at my doorstep. That said, it could be in the form of connections, it could be in the form of money, it could be in just, you know, food coming up into my house. What I'm trying to say is that when I am offering of myself as a service to the community, I'm also putting my entire trust in God to take care of me. This beautiful story about this friend of ours, Manoj, who for the last 15 years has been living in a forest, and he says, whatever my needs, the mother will provide. If it is not provided, it is not my need. So even this practice of trusting for your daily sustenance in, you know, into the hands of the universe, so even if there are doubts and concerns that come up about what will happen to me, that's always kind of balanced out by a very abundant universe that just keeps sending its gifts. And I feel very taken care of. And again, it's been a process of trusting in the universe and allowing myself to receive.
Thank you.